Joining me today is Nicholas DeGraff. Nicholas is an activist based in Fresno, California. Nicholas, let's just start off talking about Peace Fresno. Can you tell me about the history of Peace Fresno?
Yeah, well, Peace Fresno was started right after 9/11, just after 9/11. And it started out with just a basic response. It was known that there was going to be issues with brutality towards the Arab community, the Muslim community in Fresno. It was known that there was going to be a violent response to what had happened, and so it began there and just grew over the years to a much larger organization. We probably have 200 members, a solid organizing crew of 35 volunteers. Everybody's volunteer in the organization. We work with International Answer and lots of different groups to do demonstrations and pass petitions and work to get laws on the books, and not only just in, you know, the issue of war, but also what's smart in our community and bringing nonviolence and the idea of really respecting the people you're around to our own community.
And what is the climate like in Fresno? And by climate, I mean the political climate.
Well, to say conservative sometimes seems like an understatement in Fresno. It's really your Bush-type Republican land, and that can make it a very interesting place to organize, not only from the reaction of the people you're around and the fact that, you know, the police can be very intrusive and kind of overbearing on you as an activist, is that there's the other side of the coin, is that you have a lot of mindset to change, and that there's a lot of good that can be done in that area. It's kind of like being on the front lines of activism.
Prior to Peace Fresno becoming organized, was there other activist elements, organized elements?
Fresno actually has a long history of activism. Goes even back to the IWW and the Wobblies securing free speech and actually filling our jail cells in Fresno to secure free speech in our downtown area. It goes through the Latin American solidarity struggle, the struggle against, or I should say, for nuclear disarmament, and right into right after the first Gulf War, the Fresno Center for Nonviolence was established, and it served as a parent organization to lots of activist groups that are working today.
Are there any jails that are in Fresno?
Yeah, we have our county jail, men's facility, women's facility, and more, of course, are being built. We're actually building a large, brand-new federal courthouse, skyscraper-type building, one of the largest in downtown Fresno currently, and we are also surrounded by jails like Corcoran State Prison and lots of different facilities all around Fresno. It's very heavy in jails. Actually, they're looking at building in Delano right now, which is a small city outside of Fresno. They have a large prison there, which has actually hurt the economy of Delano. Delano is struggling a lot because of having this prison there. And they're actually looking at building another prison right across the street that will be as bigger, and people are resisting, and the California Prison Moratorium Project are resisting this, but they are just intent in building this prison.
So tell me what happened with Peace Fresno. Peace Fresno's made some news lately about an infiltration.
Yeah, it's kind of news that found us in a way. Peace Fresno, one of our members actually at the time was our president. She was leafing through the paper one day, and she happened by an obituary. And the obituary was of a sheriff's deputy who was a member of the anti-terrorism task force, who was killed in a motorcycle accident. Well, the interesting thing is they had a picture of this deputy, and she recognized him, but not as the name was Aaron Kilner. She recognized him as a Peace Fresno member who went by the name Aaron Stokes and was independently wealthy. And so, of course, that kicked off a lot of conversation in Peace Fresno, a lot of questions, because, you know, it's pretty telling if you have a Joint Terrorism Task Force, we assume, officer sitting in your meetings taking notes, and representing himself as something he isn't. I mean, it's pretty clear-cut infiltration. And so we wrote a letter to Sheriff Pierce, our local sheriff, asking him, you know, was this guy here for you know, at work? Was he here for you? Was he representing you? And we said, tell us no, or we assume yes, unless you point-blank say no. And he wrote back saying, Pete Sresna wasn't under investigation, is under investigation, but we can surveil groups and we can go into meetings whenever we want. We can take whatever notes, and it's all okay. And which is kind of interesting. It's like, we can surveil you for 6 months, but it's not an investigation.
Were you suspect at all of Aaron Stokes?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the great things about Pete Sresna is this really active group. I mean, it's a group of great people. And he was quiet. And that really strikes out in Pete Sresna. Pete Sresna meetings aren't very quiet. Everybody has an opinion. It's fairly vocal in what they think. And the fact that he just sat there taking notes strike me as very strange. He just, different demeanor. He was more interested in the meeting than he was in what we were doing and the organizing we were doing. And he never took an active part. Everybody had a job that they were doing, and he never had a job.
So, what advice could you give to fellow organizers in different communities for having meetings, for having public meetings?
Well, the first thing is that just keep your eyes open. That's the best thing that we all can do. And when you're suspicious of something, talk about it with somebody. Don't, you know, be paranoid about it, but let somebody know you're thinking about this and this is going on with you, because it's interesting when you start connecting the dots between a lot of things that seem small, irrelevant, or you don't think much about, start assembling into a larger pattern. If it wasn't for the sheriff's deputy dying the way he did and us finding out, we might not have ever really uncovered who he was. And so that's the major thing. The other thing is that under the Patriot Act, they're trying to say that public meetings are, you know, just fine to go in and surveil. But in Pete Sresna, we're holding a whole different view of that. And this is under the California Constitution, in the case White versus Davis in the early 70s. What happened with this case is there were government officers going into classes, and they were taking notes on who said what against the Vietnam War and about the government's policies. And this went to court, and it finally got ruled in a long court process. Finally got ruled that the classroom was a semi-public space, and that, you know, it wasn't, people had an expectation that the students were there and they were really students, and the professor there was really a professor, and that people purporting themselves to who they really were. And we're trying to say that it's the same sort of thing in Pete Sresna, in that it's a semi-public space, it's open to the public, but there is an expectation of privacy, and that you expect people that are peace activists and are worried about what's going on with our national policies. And so that's the other thing to remember, is that the law will try to treat your meetings that way, and to remember they are your own space, but the government may come in because they have this separate attitude, and that what you say in your meetings might not be private.
And so what is a result of what has happened with this infiltration? Where are you at right now with this?
Right now, we're kind of a few different places, because we have a couple of different prongs that we're working on. One's a sort of non-litigation, and one's litigation, and that's split two ways between a Freedom of Information Act that we're pursuing with the federal government and trying to get what records they have on us, and they've denied that they have any, and we're looking at the possibility of appealing this right now. And then we've also filed a tort claim suing, saying that this, you know, point blank is an incorrect process. And on the other side, we're pursuing Senator Boxer and Attorney General of California Lockyer to ask them to ask the questions that need to be asked, investigate what happened with Pete Sresna, and really determine whether or not that was a correct process. I think if they really look at it, they'll find that it wasn't.
What's your other prong?
Well, the final prong is the real community prong. It kind of goes back to what I was talking about, you know, talk with people and find out what's going on, because we're getting out in the community and we're talking with people and we're seeing what's going on in the community, and we're trying to find out what's happening so that this bigger picture that, you know, what's done in the what's done by a lot of these intelligence agencies is done in the dark, and it's really designed to be kept in the dark. And when you just start talking amongst each other, you start putting some light on what's going on, and it's amazing the picture you can start to get.
What role have the police played in kind of defining the way that people think in Fresno about activist organizing? Like, I understand that there was a conference at Fresno State about radical environmentalism, and there was quite the uproar in Fresno.
Right. It was an amazing few weeks that we had. There was a revolutionary environmentalism conference organized at CSU Fresno by some professors. It was attended by some fairly notable people, Rod Coronado, who worked with the ALF or ELF, you know, some pretty radical folks, and it was sort of between the police and the media, because the media started whipping it up as all these radical environmentalists are going to come into town and every SUV inside is going to be smashed and burned. And it got to the point where the police were doing extra patrols of SUV dealerships, which were then reported on the media. And of course, all that happened was a conference. It was greatly publicized because, I mean, everybody was waiting for an SUV to burn, so every media outlet was out and about. But it was incredible, and it actually turned out afterwards that because people who were notable and, you know, people wondered about, like Rod Coronado, were there, a grand jury in West Virginia actually subpoenaed records and subpoenaed videos of this conference. Of course, who knows why grand juries are done totally in the dark. So,
and whose videos were subpoenaed?
The videos of those made by people who were there, the organizers, you know, all sorts of information, and they sent this request to California State University, Fresno.
Could I, without getting too picky, could I ask how they even knew about the videos?
That's an interesting question. It's almost like they had somebody there. You know, that's an uneducated guess on how, but yeah, you're right. How's this grand jury in West Virginia know
who took videos and who to subpoena for the videos?
Right. I think they sent the subpoena to Fresno State. I think they knew what happened, and they were just getting whatever documentation. But it's interesting. Why is this grand jury in West Virginia subpoenaing a revolutionary environmentalism conference in Fresno, California?
Were the videos put out to the public or through the college?
No, they were privately done. You know, it's interesting. I mean, this conference also was sent out on a California Anti-Terrorism Information Center bulletin. They had a bulletin about this conference warning, and that's where a lot of this hype came from, is the CATIC bulletin.
And so what happened at the conference?
A lot of students got educated in revolutionary environmentalism, why you should be a vegan, why there's activism necessary to save the environment, and a lot of good academic education. Can't say as any SUVs were burned.
Now, is there a large industry in Fresno?
Fresno's a big agricultural area where grapes, cotton, garlic. Actually, I recently heard, I don't have this on good authority, that Fresno overtook Gilroy in garlic production. But we're, you know, big agricultural area. We feed a portion of the world's population for what's produced in Fresno and get shipped off through San Francisco, Los Angeles. But actually at CSU Fresno, they pioneer in things like new pesticides and new ways to genetically modify food and all sorts of things that most of us who are environmentally inclined kind of get a little worried about.
Yeah, so those are maybe some of the reasons then that they would be upset about this conference, and it might be more the knowledge that's being passed than it is the threat of SUVs burning.
Oh, and it's also the irrationality. I mean, you know, it's also your SUV-driving population of Fresno who can get whipped up about this sort of thing, and they just take what the media says. I mean, we saw this horribly demonstrated, and we're still feeling the effects all through the 90s. I mean, still today, it still goes on. It's just that it was really intense during the 90s. So many crime stories. The media just whipped up crime in Fresno. And they really, it's just the only thing you could digest off of the news. And it turned into massive police increases. I mean, the police force grew by 200 officers at a time. And it got to the point where we now have a complete police state across the west side of Fresno. We have officer-involved shootings on a regular basis. I mean, we're talking minimum once a month. And I mean, a lot of unjustified unarmed shootings. And so the police definitely play a sharp role in Fresno.
Before we get into the police in Fresno, I wanted to ask about independent media and alternative media. How can you get your voice out if the media is not doing a good job?
Well, that's been a big focus and a big important thing that we've been really focusing on and working on in Fresno. And we have some good things going on right now as far as that is concerned. Of course, we have KFCF 88.1, which has been around for quite a while.
Tell me about that. I'm familiar with KPFA, and I hear about KFCF all the time on KPFA.
Right. Well, it's what we do is we're a sister station to KPFA, and we broadcast a lot of what people hear on KPFA. Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. We have Larry Bensky, Hard Knock Radio, all the shows everybody loves, and then we also put on some of our own local broadcasting to, you know, give groups a voice on the radio and give people a voice to talk about the activism that they're working on, and also even to promote entertainment and the entertainment section that's going on in Fresno, which is really important. And so, that's KFCF.
Okay, and then what else do you have besides KFCF?
Well, there's KFCF. We have the Community Alliance Magazine, which has been in the community for a while, and it's really, you know, it's the way people plug in together. It's a lot of organization people read it a lot of times to find out what the other organizations are doing, and also included in this is a more up and coming sources. We've just recently started a Central Valley Indie Media site that's tagged on to IndieBay.org, and that's going well. We're working on getting to the point where we can actually go off and have our own Central Valley site at some point.
Now, the Central Valley, I'd heard that there was people, you know, as far north as, say, Chico, as far south as Bakersfield working on this site.
That's right.
Tell me about the different communities that have expressed interest in the Central Valley site.
It's made this indie media project so interesting because of the fact that it's going to look different than a lot of other indie medias, for instance, like IndieBay, who we're hooked up with. They're covering a certain specific area, you know, within the Bay Area. And, you know, there's a difference between, like, Berkeley, Oakland, and San Francisco, but it's all kind of in the same area. But we're dealing with it where you have, yeah, Chico, Sacramento, Modesto, Merced, Fresno, Bakersfield. You're dealing with some very different places. I mean, we're all in the valley, which makes us different from the rest of the world in one way to begin with. But also each area is very different. It's different from even Bakersfield to Fresno, or even to Visalia in between. And so it's made an interesting project of how do you get all these people coordinated in such a great distance. I mean, you can't have an editorial meeting once a week. So that's made it an interesting thing, and also it's been interesting trying to work it so that you're making sure to get news out for each of the areas and making sure to try to cover there, and also trying to get reporters from those areas to start getting writing in, because it's generated by the people. It just takes people doing it, and that's what we need.
You've had, what, a meeting in Fresno or a meeting in Sacramento?
We've had a couple different meetings. What we've been doing is we've had individual community meetings. Each community is kind of like a little organizing collective. And then we've had a meeting in Sacramento. It was actually huge. There was 50 to 75 people. It's a gigantic indie media meeting. And we've met there, and we've also gone over to meet with IndieBay. Meet with the IndieBay folks, because they're really being great in helping us go through the IMC process and setting us up with a space to work off of and get jumped off of. I really appreciate it.
Tell me about the Free Republic.
Oh man, that's a good question. The Free Republic, a lot of people know about. It's not just a Fresno phenomenon. This is a group that stretches across the country in like 50 plus organizations. They're the people who helped to organize the counter demonstrations to the San Francisco mobilizations that ANSWER does. ANSWER actually has to dedicate a little bit of security over to these guys, but they're like an online activist group that, you know, tries to do right wing radical activism, grassroots style, use our tactics, but you know, for the things that a lot of us progressive folks are fighting for. So they work online and they hold demonstrations and they train new activists and they do these sorts of things, and they also just, you know, very violent people, very threatening. I mean, they send threats all over the place. They have threats on their website. They have very homophobic, very racist, anti-Muslim rhetoric on their website. It's what I would classify myself personally as a hate group, and other people have said so.
They have a radio station now too, or a radio program, I noticed, on their website. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. Oh, no. Well, there's always been KMJ in Fresno, and there's also Fox News Radio, which, you know, Fox News is Fox News. And I don't have to go into what Fox News is like. Fair and balanced is a good joke. But KMJ is like the place for right-wing pundits. It's AM.
Free Republic. Now, it's based in Fresno, California, right?
Right.
But
right.
It has chapters in other...
All around the country. A lot of their board members are based in D.C., and,
board members, so are they like a nonprofit?
Yeah, they're a 501c4.
What's that?
That's a nonprofit lobby.
And they work too, I think, with Clear Channel. Because these counter demonstrations were also sent out by Clear Channel.
Well, it's at least suspicious. It can at least Michael call it suspicious in the fact that these guys are working on this and they're promoting this, and then you have Clear Channel who's just promoting this like nothing before. So it's got to at least make you wonder.
And Michael Savage too.
Right. Well, you know, they're an interesting group. A lot of it, they don't seem to spend a lot of energy actually working for something. They spend a lot of energy just countering whatever the peace movement's doing, or whatever any liberal movement's doing. So it's not a very proactive group. They're just pretty much there to annoy.
Now, we're in Santa Cruz right now, and it's very different from Fresno, but let's discuss kind of how things come together. We were talking about how the Central Valley kind of bends into Salinas, which Salinas starts to become associated, you know, with Santa Cruz, Monterey.
Right. Well, you know, one, issues always seem to be universal in some way, you know. You might have certain changes for your area or this area, but there's kind of universal concerns that are going on. But I think in Salinas even differs from Santa Cruz in the fact that Salinas is more conservative like the Fresno area. And you have that stronger vein of conservatism in Salinas. And like, for instance, I know of a case, chapter head of the National Action Network in Salinas is going through dealing with the fact that she had racial discrimination set on her by the faculty, and they're just finishing up settling a suit on gender discrimination. And I mean, that sort of thing going on, most people think of this area, especially in Fresno where I'm from, as being extremely liberal, and I think even some of us in the Valley don't realize how closely linked we can be to Salinas and kind of the other Valley.
You had also mentioned tonight about $7 million per year going into Fresno for the war on terrorism. How'd you find that out?
I heard it was in the news.
It was just in the news, huh?
Yeah, they openly let that one out, which is kind of interesting because I actually they infiltrated us, so I did a little infiltrating of my own. There was a Homeland Security symposium that was being held by Congressman Radanovich. And so I went to this thing. It was all the law enforcement agencies, local law enforcement agencies. Everybody's dealt with Homeland Security right up to the California Army National Guard. And I went in there, and I talked to some of the first responders, and they said that, you know, they didn't know of any time of being called out to really anything or any of real urgent threats or special threats in Fresno. I said, other than large gatherings, which isn't very much different than any other city. And they said also, you know, in their workshops that their main concern with the Valley was bioterrorism and the fact that there was lots of pesticides and chemicals around it scattered about the farms, which that you could infect a lot of food in the valley, which made me kind of think to myself, what makes that different from Ohio or Iowa? So it's interesting. So they got this $7 million, but no real specific special threats, yet it makes us something like fifth, sixth in funding. And so you've got to wonder, what are they doing with all this money? And that's when we swoop back around to Peace Fresno and realize, oh, they're spending this money infiltrating peace groups and doing things like that. It makes you worried.
Now, you were involved in organizing an Earth Day celebration, right?
No, I was actually involved in annoying an Earth Day celebration.
annoying an Earth Day celebration. Okay, so
yeah.
Why is that?
Well,
you don't like the Earth?
No, actually, maybe I like it too much. I don't know. It was one of those difficult positions to be in as an organizer, because I really believe in building a strong movement, a unified movement, not letting small things divide us and you know, finding those common grounds, and I think that that's the way we're really going to do things. But unfortunately, a group of us who are, you know, kind of your more radical, I wouldn't say, you know, radical environmentalists, but your more radical environmentalist types found out that the Earth Day had accepted a sponsorship from the zoo, which of course drove us nuts, because the zoo is, to us, an animal prison. We can't see why you're caging animals for around the world for entertainment purposes. And we don't think this is a very good environmentally conscious group to have sponsoring you. You already have Toyota, who I realize they have a hybrid car, but they also have three lines of SUVs, was already sponsoring. Draw the line, but the zoo just drove us nuts. So we sent a letter saying, you know, these are our concerns, and we'd like your response. And if we can't come to some agreement, it's possible we'll be protesting. It ended up that the zoo actually pulled out from that pressure. So we were pleased. We were sad that it happened. We were sad to kind of, you know, have to squabble within, you know, our goals and the Earth Day goals are, you know, the same. It's just we had a conflict about how to get there. That's unfortunate, but I'm glad it's over.
Have any national groups been supporting you within Fresno?
Yeah, actually, we've been getting a lot of support. We've been, especially for the infiltration issue, we've been working a lot with the ACLU Northern California. They've both been working and helping us with this infiltration issue, and also working to establish an independent police auditor to monitor a lot of these police brutality issues. We've been working with International Answer and coordinating with them, and there's a lot of groups that are working in Fresno, and more are needed. There's definitely room for more.
Do you have a group like Cop Watch? Is that what the independent auditor is like?
Somewhat. I would say that Cop Watch has a far more involved program than we do, and they're more, you know, straight on the street, you know, monitoring what's going on. There's the Central California Criminal Justice Committee, and they're focused on passing legislative changes which would change the atmosphere that all this brutality happens in, mostly in ways in like the independent police auditor who would be able to investigate officers and get them kicked off the force instead of the police force policing itself, and trying to get things like complaint forms out for people. And there's also groups like, I work with the National Action Network, and we take individual cases on and kind of advocate for people and families, and also for the legislative changes we think are necessary. We don't have a full Cop Watch, but we have a lot of people who are trying to do what they can. We of course, you know, the common theme you'll find in Fresno is that more money, more activists are needed. It's the sort of place where there's no end of work to be done, and it's a wide open opportunity for any activist.
What is the story with the police in Fresno?
You know, there's this huge buildup in the 90s. Just got insane. I mean, the police force has always had corruption all over it. I mean, going way, way back. Mark Arax wrote a book about his father's death, Era Arax, talking about the police corruption and the possibility that it was involved in his father's death. So it goes back to, you know, that time and even beyond. But in Fresno, you saw this massive police buildup through the 90s, and it's turned into the point where there's a difference in people, how people are treated in Fresno. In the north part of Fresno, which is more affluent, more white, the police are your model police force. And they are just, you know, going by the book and treating people great. You go to West Fresno, Southwest Fresno, and you're in a complete police state. And of course, this is your more, you know, socially, economically, you know, declined area. It's a difficult area. And the police there are absolutely brutal. They're shoot first, ask questions later sort of mentality. And you're seeing a number of police shootings coming out of this area and community hostility towards the police force. And the police force has a complete admitted inability to be able to fully do their job because of this community hostility for how they treat the community. And it's this horrible situation that's going on.
Were you in Sacramento for the demonstrations against the biotech industry?
Yeah, it was the WTO agricultural ministry conference in Sacramento. It's an interesting place. Never have I seen for such a peaceful, quiet protest. It was like even 5,000 people. Full riot gear, cops lining the streets with every type of arsenal you could think of, including officers posted on top of vans in sniper position over marchers about 10 feet away, armored personnel carriers, numbers of helicopters, incredible.
Tell me about some of the organizing that you've done outside of the Central Valley. What have you been involved in?
Well, organizing outside of Central Valley, I've been involved in a number of different issues. I've been in contact with people I talked about in Salinas who are dealing with this discrimination problems at HEALD. I'm very active in the Bay Area, of course, you know, working with Indy Media on the Central Valley site and organizing with a lot of people up there, especially around anti-war stuff and civil rights organizing.
How about Alaska?
Alaska, that's one of my pet issues. I'm really into Alaska stuff right now.
What's happening?
There's a few different problems that's going on with Alaska right now. One is with drilling, and one is with clear cutting. You know, same kind of two problems that you always have going on in Alaska. They want to drill the Alaska Coastal Plain, which is of course a spiritually sacred area to the Gwich'in people. You have this argument that, of course, we need the oil to, you know, quit our foreign dependency. And of course, oil, if you drained all of it out of that area, lasts the United States at our current consumption rate 6 months, yet destroy 35 independent watersheds that are pristine areas, and just beautiful, beautiful, teeming with life. And they want to destroy this for 6 months worth of oil. Then you also have the Tongass and the Chugach, which the Bush administration made a backroom deal with the state of Alaska to reverse the roadless rule, which is of course 90% supported by the public in the national comment period. But what they did is they reversed the roadless rule so that now they can start clear cutting the Tongass and the Chugach, which of course they're oiling their chainsaws right now. And we're seeing people like Governor Schwarzenegger catching on to this and trying to do the same thing for California and cut into our wilderness areas and our areas that we were able to preserve by this roadless rule. And so it's creating a domino effect across the country. And so one of the important issues that's coming up is that in June, there's a vote on the Alaska Rainforest Act, H.R. 979. And it's very important to pass that law through to protect the roadless rule because we're talking about some pristine areas that even Alaska's future is depending on, because the logging industry is a finite industry. The lumber in Alaska is not worth much in the market if you really check it. And this is even going by the state of Alaska's own numbers. Governor Murkowski tried to disprove everybody in this argument by having his Department of Labor do a study, and the study actually came out on our side saying, look, if you log Alaska, you have a finite industry that's not worth much, that only produces so many jobs and hurts the two sustainable industries, which is commercial fishing and tourism.
What are some examples of some of the positive alternatives that you've seen develop since you've been an activist?
Well, I mean, I think I've seen one phenomenon that a lot of people have just because of the state of the times is that it's the, you know, increase in numbers of people and who's involved with the war and then with the upcoming elections, and just this massive influx of people who are working and worried about these issues, and it's great, and you know, I hope it continues. I think that's one thing activists should start thinking about now is how to, you know, retain the people you're working with and make people, you know, work on this past November. But also I've seen some positive developments in that we've really gotten organized in Fresno, and we've gotten productive in what we're doing, and we've become effective. I think even our infiltration shows that we've become effective. It's how you can't ignore Peace Fresno anymore. You can't ignore these organizations that are working in the community anymore. Kind of makes me think back to that Mahatma Gandhi quote, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And it seems like we're through the first two and we're going into the fight period. And so it's kind of encouraging that we're being so effective in what we're doing, just judging the response from the people that we're kind of disagreeing with.
All right. Thanks a lot for your time tonight.
You bet.